This is a good example of a presentation that started out being a, you know, what I would like to think is a useful academic exercise, but nonetheless an academic exercise. And as events overtook us, actually became much more current and salient than I could possibly have expected. My collaborator, Dana Patton, was unable to be here. She's a political science professor at the University of Alabama and was previously on our faculty in the College of Public Health. So the political science aspect of this is Dana's. I will be happy to make note of your political science questions and pass them on to her. I'm sorry that she couldn't be here. She's much younger and cuter than I am, but anyway. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay, Dana and I have taken a rather deep dive in the legal infrastructure of local public health, particularly as it relates to the concept of home rule. And I know Andy is also going to be talking about home rule in the context of a very exciting situation, exciting in terms of public health law, anyway, in Cleveland. But basically, the underlying concept to keep in mind is if the state has not given your jurisdiction home rule, you don't have it, okay? You have what is called Dillon's rule, which is the opposite of home rule, and that means that the state government is in charge of what's going on at the local level. So we have home rule comes, home rule goes. Right now, and once again, this started bubbling up after we began exploring the topic, home rule is under discussion in West Virginia and Washington. So if you happen to be from West Virginia or Washington, you might know what's going on there. But typically, local public health is a local government function. So if you have home rule for, you know, everything else and usually comes with a certain amount of taxing authority, you have home rule, you have local jurisdictional autonomy for public health. Now, that's not a black and white situation. And I use the example of Florida, which has broad local authority, but not for taxation. And of course, as Jennifer often reminds us, just because the law is on the books doesn't mean that the local jurisdiction chooses at any particular moment in time to exercise it. So in 11 states, the local health department structure doesn't follow the model in place for other kinds of county government units. In 9 states, which we're not talking about in this presentation, there is local health department autonomy, although there isn't county home rule for other functions. In the 3 states I'm talking about today, it's the other way around. We have home rule for most functions, but centralized local health department governance. And this thereby, as the saying goes, thereby hangs a tail, hangs several tails, actually. This is almost like an oral history project in a way, because we have very specific narratives for each of these states. And there's a list of the states that are in this divergent kind of category. So the turns of events that made this inquiry much more salient and current than we expected have to do with all these initiatives to mess around with local public health infrastructure. Just when we're trying to study it, all of a sudden, kaplooey, you know, off it goes. So we have the classic models that we all are familiar with, right? We have state-directed, centralized, whatever you want to call it. We have locally directed, decentralized, whatever. And then we have kind of hybrid things. So now, what do we have? We have some regional collaboration, and I think some of us think that's a good thing because we have lots of teeny tiny local public health jurisdictions that really can't perform the essential public health services in any consistent manner in their jurisdiction. But we also have, and notably in North Carolina, this phenomenon of segmenting and reallocating local health department functions under the governance of county commissioners. I believe, and I'm looking at Ross here because he's from North Carolina, up to, what, six counties now, I think, in North Carolina who have done this. And, you know, basically vaporize their Board of Health. So this is, and the tendency is in these circumstances to bring the public health functions into a kind of human services omnibus agency, which is all very well, except what about environmental health, which is not under the auspices of human services. So that's why I talk about segmentation and reallocation of functions. And that's this third bullet point, the vertical integration. So we have kind of horizontal integration with this regionalization movement, and then vertical integration of human services units within a single jurisdiction. So our nice, reasonably tidy models are tending to wander around right now. This is the ASTO map of local number of local health departments by state. And actually, Louisiana should be in the maroon category because they have two. It says one in this presentation, but I subsequently learned there are two local health departments in Louisiana, and I'll talk about that later. So the three case studies that we've been working on are in Arkansas, which authorizes county health departments, but in 1971, under Governor Dale Bumpers, all of the health department employees became state employees, and the health departments are still state-managed, state-funded. Louisiana centralized, except for New Orleans, and Plaquemine Parish. That's the second one that nobody, I think, had accounted for until our local informant pointed that out just a week ago. And in South Carolina, where, once again, we start with county health departments and then everything is consolidated under state jurisdiction. So this is a narrative for Arkansas, and I use this as an example that you cannot take statute at face value. If you look at Arkansas statute, you would think Arkansas had local autonomous health departments, and it doesn't. So, and my informant here is Rick Hogan, who I'm sure is well known to some of us in the room. Hi, what was that? Okay.
Those of us on the East Coast, it's power outage.
Okay. Except I have to read something, so I. Okay. I'll come back to Louisiana then. This is the narrative in South Carolina, which actually has a nice little published history of public health in South Carolina. Louisiana and South Carolina are among the oldest health agencies in the United States.
Yeah, be careful of that.
Yeah. I think it's just hyper exquisitely sensitive there. So county health departments, in Charleston, South Carolina, they've been doing local public health, as you might imagine, forever. And likewise in New Orleans with yellow fever, and there's this wonderful historical narrative for both of these jurisdictions. In South Carolina, interestingly, the Rockefeller Foundation was responsible for some of the, what we would think of now as more in the nature of international development aid. But this was in South Carolina, in less prosperous areas of the state. So this, once again, these narratives are absolutely fascinating, and I encourage you to look at them. And obviously the fortunes of state health departments come and go over time, but in 1981, all the county health department staff was transferred to the state payroll, where they remain to this day. Now, I'm going to read very briefly this narrative from Dr. Trachman from Louisiana, who has actually made a personal project of being up to speed on the history of his state health department. He says, the major public health efforts aimed at controlling outbreaks of infectious disease in the major port city of New Orleans were largely local government, not Louisiana state government, starting in the 18th century, obviously, because New Orleans has been there for a long time. In the early 20th century, the recognition that humanitarian efforts were also needed in addition to epidemic control and sanitary concerns to address population health problems gave rise to public health activities at the state level. Then in 1927, there were these huge Mississippi River floods in Louisiana that also added to the impetus to give rise to local parish, because this is Louisiana health jurisdictions, and to get buy-in of local governments to public health efforts. However, at this time, and this was new information, I think, to a lot of us, they have local public health departments only exist in the city of New Orleans, obviously, I think we knew that, and Plaquemine Parish, which is right outside New Orleans. Although state-financed health services are offered in each of these places as well. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of politics in all of this, but he particularly points to the local insistence on some local government control because it is local taxation. So we're, once again, we're seeing a lot of movement in the organization of public health jurisdictions, horizontal integration, vertical integration, as I'm calling them just because those are terms I think some of us who deal with healthcare administration can relate to. The horizontal integration leads to functions that are somewhat like more centralized state functions, but they may run into some issues with the local legal infrastructure. And also what we find frequently is that the county authorities are very reluctant to share tax revenue. So if the funding source is local, what you often see is really a lot of reluctance to go into these, what I call horizontal, in other words, across the landscape kind of relationships. Conversely, the kinds of vertically integrated health and human services analogs in local jurisdictions may undermine accreditation and quality improvement initiatives because they're not providing all the essential health services, notably in the area of environmental health. So I thank and really do thank the Public Health Law Research National Program office for their ongoing support and keeping these issues alive, and look forward to answering questions.